Welcome to Sharp Waves, a podcast from the International League Against Epilepsy. Our episodes cover epilepsy research, clinical care, career development, and issues in diagnosis and treatment from around the globe.
Okay, so let's begin. So my name is Bruna. I'm from Italy. And today we will talk about AG training and availability. With me, a special guest. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Sandor Benitsky. I'm an MD PhD. I'm working in Denmark. I'm professor at Aarhus University, and I'm the head of the diagnostic department at the Danish Epilepsy Center in Dianalund.
Thank you, Professor Benitsky, to be here with us. Could you tell us what your medical and neurological training was like, in particular with regard to EEG and epilepsy?
All right. So I trained as a neurologist and I did my PhD and my medical school in Hungary at the University of Szeged. And then I completed the clinical neurophysiology fellowship, which is 2.5 years full-time training in EEG and EMG and polysomnography in Denmark. And then I also did the European certification in epileptology in 2008 and 2009, which was organized by the European Academy of Epilepsy.
Could you briefly summarize the most important differences between neurology and in training in Europe, United States, and the rest of the world?
Right. So in the United States, this is a 3 years residency program, but the prerequisite is 1 year of internal medicine. So altogether, it's 4 years, but 1 year internal medicine plus 3 years of neurology proper. In Europe, it's between 4 and 5 years of neurology training. And then, of course, there are numerous differences in the learning objectives, the specific curricula. But I think the most obvious is the duration difference.
And what are the differences between neurology and neurophysiology training? And what are the most important differences in neurophysiology training in the different parts of the world?
Well, you know, clinical neurophysiology training is very, very different. So in some parts of the world is completely absent, and then this is part of the neurology. So during the residency, they can learn EEG, EMG, and then perhaps they get a certification in that. Now, in other countries, at the opposite end of the spectrum, you have those countries where clinical neurophysiology is a specialty, not a subspecialty, but you can opt for that right after medical school. That's the case in some West European countries like UK, Ireland, some of the Scandinavian countries, to my recollection, Portugal. So that's a specialty. And when it's a specialty training, that's usually 4 and 5 years. Now, 6 months of neurology is compulsory within the clinical neurophysiology when that's a main specialty. However, in most of the countries, this is a subspecialty. And then it's either a kind of a master in clinical neurophysiology or a formalized subspecialty training as in Denmark.
There was a recent paper calling for harmonizing clinical neurophysiology training. Could you discuss the different curricula and pathways reported in the paper, as well as the EEG specific training?
Yeah, so this paper you are alluding to was authored by Jonathan Cole and Anita Camondi, and this was published earlier this year in Clinical Neurophysiology. Well, basically, they start by mapping what's out there, and as I've just told you, it's a huge heterogeneity. So they start by giving an overview about the state of the art, what's going on in the different countries, and then they come with recommendations. And I must say, I really like these recommendations because they are very flexible. I mean, it's unrealistic to imagine that based on this guideline, all the countries will harmonize and do the same thing, but they allow for this heterogeneity. So they issue recommendations for those countries where this is as an independent specialty, and then they issue recommendations for those countries where this is a subspecialty. So they are flexible enough to adapt to the local peculiarities. Nevertheless, within each category, they specify the minimum criteria and the guidelines, and they focus very much on the governance, how this should be done, then the competencies that must be mastered during the training. Then they specify also the number of investigations, the numbers of tests that must be done, how many EMGs you have to do supervised, how many EGs you need to read supervised, and so on. They also have this very, again, flexible, modulary approach. And then they specify that there are some primary competencies. And of course, these are the EG, EMG, nerve conduction, and the evoked potentials. And then as complementary competencies, they list all the rest, like intracranial EG and single fiber EMG, and so on.
The imputer-observer agreement in EEG interpretation is only moderate. How can we reduce the inter-rater variability? Could you tell us about the standardized computer-based organizer reporting of EEG, also called Score EEG software?
Right. So first of all, let me say that I'm aware that many, many papers prove that it's only a moderate agreement when neurophysiologists look at EEGs, but that's not totally true because most of those papers addressed an artificial scenario, like experts were given 10 seconds of EEG with one discharge, and the question was, is it an epileptic form discharge or not? But this is an unrealistic scenario. What's a realistic scenario then? You give the expert an EEG, and then you want to know, does this EEG contain epileptic form discharges, for example, or diffuse slowing? So you look at a whole EEG. So if you just ask the experts about one discharge, indeed, the inter-rater agreement is moderate. But if you give the experts the whole EEG, then the inter-rater agreement is substantial. And for some items, like, for example, the generalized epileptic form discharges, it's even almost perfect. We've recently published a paper in JAMA Neurology where this was one of our findings. Well, the main goal in that paper was to validate an artificial intelligence model. But as a side product of that paper, we had the inter-rater agreement of experts when reviewing the whole EEG, and then the inter-rater agreement is much better. So first I wanted to do a kind of myth busting with saying that we are not that bad. It's an artificial question when you ask just about 10 seconds. Now, having said that, of course, there is room for improvement, and then we must increase the inter-rater agreement. Now, how can we do? Of course, we must speak a common language. So we need to come with a clear list of common data elements, a clear definition of what is what. And then, of course, it would help if we would use a computer software to label all these abnormalities that we spot on the EEG so that we avoid variability, which may be derived from using free text. So if you just click on the items which you identify, then of course you use the same terminology, the same nomenclature. Now, SCORE was developed exactly for this purpose, to provide a common terminology and a common way of describing it. And then on the long run, this is an excellent input also for developing AI models.
And what about the implementation, the future of the SCORE EEG?
Well, I think that the future implementation will be much aided if algorithms and AI models will use this system. But the biggest obstacle is still that often SCORE runs as a standalone or an independent software package from the EEG reader. And often we encounter difficulties in implementing it. For example, the IT departments of the hospital do not want to allow an external software getting access to the EEGs and so on. So I think using AI models with SCORE and integrating SCORE into the EEG reader would really help in spreading this out.
The Epilepsy Disorder Internship Program team has developed a series of online video-based learning modules called Roadmap to EEGs, and also the International League Against Epilepsy, the Virtual Epilepsy Academy, provides an online EEG courses. What are the similarities and differences between the two?
Right. Well, first of all, I have to emphasize that although the goal is the same, I mean, the size and the coverage of these initiatives are completely different. So the ILE Academy is really aiming at comprehensive education in epileptology, and obviously EEG is part of it. Now, within the ILE Academy, we have different tools to teach EEG. Perhaps the most important is the VIREPA, which is an online tutored 6 months course. We have the basic course, and then we have another course for neonatal and pediatric, and then we have a third EEG course for the advanced EEG. Now, besides this, we have also self-paced interactive tools, and then, very importantly, the roadmap is consisting of a series of short lectures, and we are developing this further, but these address specific items in EEG reading, and these are also available on the Epileptic Disorders homepage, and we are working in integrating it also into the ILE Academy. So again, these two point into the same direction, and the roadmap is just a small part in the big ILE Academy.
Many lower resource regions have no EEG machine or only a few and very limited capacity to interpret their pre-recordings. Do you know of initiatives or programs that address these important issues?
Oh, yes. So first of all, the hardware. Together with the Denmark's Technical University, we've developed a very inexpensive EEG machine, so it's using the computation power, for example, from tablets or smartphones. So the goal was indeed to give the hardware, the machine, to the resource-limited areas, to the low and middle-income countries. But of course, the hardware is not enough. I mean, you need to interpret it. And then there are several ways of solving it. One is to educate the people. So that's why many of the ILE's educational programs are online to facilitate the reach out. So education is one component. And then the other component is facilitating telemedicine. So if you do not have experts locally, then perhaps you can get help via telemedicine from experts sitting another place. And then the third component would be, and I really believe that will be the game changer, is developing artificial intelligence models for solving this.
What advice would you give to a young epileptologist who wants to further his or her growth in epilepsy research? What practical tools to grow?
Well, to do research, you really need to know epileptology in advance. And I think that the young trainees have a fantastic tool to learn epileptology, and it's online available, and it's the ILE Academy. So no excuse not knowing about epilepsy, because now you have the proper tool to learn it, and it's available anywhere you are in the world. If you have access to the internet, you have access to the ILE Academy too. Now, this is the basis, and then the research. Well, I always tell my students that if we want to do research, then you have to be curious about a problem and then come with ideas how to solve that.
Is there anything else you would like to say about epilepsy education, research that we haven't talked about, and any other suggestion for improvement to the current situation?
I can compare the current situation with what I've been in 20 years or 25 years ago, and I can see already a huge improvement. So there are lots of available educational resources on the internet. Obviously, there is still room for improvement, and the self-paced learning modules will, again, be a game changer. And then again, coming back, artificial intelligence will also play a major role in education. So it may provide you an adaptive tool for learning. So I think we made a huge progress, and I can expect that this will improve considerably in the near future.
Thanks for listening to Sharp Waves. Our content is meant for informational purposes only and not as medical or clinical advice. The International League Against Epilepsy is the world's preeminent association of health professionals and scientists working toward a world where no person's life is limited by epilepsy. Find more Sharp Waves episodes wherever you get your podcasts or at ilae.org.